Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everyone. This is Jim McGrew, Chief Client Services Officer for Ogletree Deacons, and welcome to today's podcast, What's the Deal with Federal Contractors and the OFCCP? The basics. I'm joined today by Lee Nason from our Columbia, South Carolina office. Lee is the head of our firm's Affirmative Action and OFCCP Compliance Group. Hello, Lee. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So, Lee, what is the deal with federal contractors and the OFCCP? Why is this area so important?
Oh, my goodness. Federal contractors and subcontractors are a hot ticket item in the Trump administration, surprisingly so. So, Jim, federal contractors are those folks, those companies that either buy from or they sell to an executive agency of the United States government. So that might be the Department of Defense. It could be the Bureau of Prisons. It could even be the post office. Not every contract is going to make them a federal contractor or a subcontractor where they have to worry about affirmative action obligations, which is what we're talking about today. But if they've got a contract of at least $150,000, which is not that high, then they got to comply with some legal obligations for minorities and women, disabled individuals and veterans, kind of a super Title VII obligation.
Let's talk about what is a federal contractor.
Sure. A federal contractor is a company that either buys from or sells to the federal government. It's got to be an executive agency like Department of Defense, or the Bureau of Prisons, or even the post office. And not every contract that a company enters into with entities like that will cover them under the affirmative action regulations that we're talking about today. But if they're at least got a contract of $150,000, they're going to be covered by three laws in this area. The Executive Order 11246, which just says federal contractors can't discriminate. Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act, which protects individuals with disabilities in the federal contracting space. And then the Vietnam-era Veterans Readjustment Assistance Act, called VEVRA, which protects certain veterans in the affirmative action arena. Of course, it can affect all kinds of industries, manufacturers and hospitals and colleges and universities and even nonprofits.
So before we talk about the three laws that are applicable to those the contracts of $150,000 or above, let me ask you this. Is it a federal contract with any government agency, whether it's directly a department or an agency of the federal government?
Any executive agency instrumentality, or I think the language is something like wholly incorporated subsidiary or affiliate or instrumentality, I think is what it is. But there's a variety of entities that count, so to speak, in this space, and it's certainly worth looking into. Now, most contractors would have an idea of whether they're covered or not, because when they sign a contract with the federal government, assuming it's a direct contract, they're going to see something called federal acquisition regulation clauses included in that contract. That's a real clue that you're probably going to be considered a federal contractor.
Yeah, so that was going to be my next question. How does one determine whether or not, for sure, whether or not they are a federal contractor for purposes of those three laws that you described?
So you can look at your contract, and it'll, as I said, it'll give you a clue. It might not set it out specifically. It might reference you to a website link that says, here are the terms and conditions in here, and you got to go ferret it out. That's not very fun or not very easy. An easier way to look at it is to go on the web, Dr. Google. There's plenty of or several procurement sites. One is called the Federal Procurement Data Service, FPDS.gov. There's also something called USAspending.gov. There's a Department of Labor Enforcement database. There's even a place on OFCCP's website that you can look and see whether you or a subsidiary have been audited by OFCCP. So lots of places to find this information using your company name, DUNS number, lots of things like that. And it's certainly worth checking on because, as we're going to talk about, there are a lot of obligations if you are a federal contractor or a subcontractor.
Great. So, Lee, let's talk a little bit about, before again we talk about the three laws that apply to federal contracts of $150,000 or above, what do entities need to know if they have contracts with a federal agency or the federal government that are less than $150,000?
So the very bottom line threshold is $10,000. So if you've got four contracts with the federal government, I don't want to leave out subcontracts, but let's just stick with contracts right now. If you've got four contracts with the feds of $2,500 each, that aggregates up to $10,000. You're going to have certain basic obligations. You're going to have to post the EEO posters, and you're going to have to, to tell people that you're an equal opportunity employer. It's not much different than what Title VII requires. But once you hit one contract of $50,000 or one contract of $150,000, that's when very robust obligations kick in. You've got to prepare affirmative action programs. You've got to ask your applicants and employees to self-ID their ethnicity and gender and disabled status and veteran status. You've got to have certain language that you put in your contracts. Very specific, sometimes onerous requirements attach at certain levels. And so it's important to know what level you're, you know, number one, are you a federal contractor or a covered subcontractor? And number two, what level is that? Actually, $150,000 is pretty low.
So Lee, before we move on, let's talk about the three laws that are applicable to federal contractors that have contracts that are in excess of $150,000. Can you tell us a little bit more about those three laws and
Absolutely.
What they require?
So the first one, the one that's most well known, is something called Executive Order 11246. It is an executive order. It's not a statute. It was put into place by President Lyndon Johnson when he was having trouble getting Title VII passed, actually. So he implemented an executive order saying that if you're going to do business with the federal government, then those federal contractors cannot discriminate based on race, gender, national origin, all the things that you now see in Title VII. That, for our purposes in the affirmative action context, that protects women and minority groups. There's also something called the Rehabilitation Act, which is the federal government corollary to the Americans with Disabilities Act. So Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act says federal contractors can't discriminate against disabled individuals, just like the ADA says outside of the federal contracting context. And then the fourth one is something that protects, is a law that protects certain types of veterans, not all veterans, but certain veterans under the Vietnam era Veterans Readjustment Assistance Act, basically says there's a list of veterans that are protected under that, and that's what the affirmative action laws cover, and those are the veterans laws that are enforced by the OSCCP.
Got it. So let's talk then a little bit about the obligations that those contractors have that have a contract of $150,000 or above, so they are a federal contractor. What are the basic obligations that they have, affirmative action obligations, under the laws that you talked a little bit about? Can you
Sure.
talk about that a little
So
bit?
So there's two types of federal contractors, and that's going to affect what they have to do. If you're a construction company, you do business, you know, you're doing highway projects, or you're putting in electrical power on federal land or things like that. That's one type of federal contractor, and it has a certain specific type of enforcement obligation and compliance obligation. It's called complying with the 16 steps that this agency sets out. It's not as formal as what you normally see with everybody else that's not construction. Those folks, they're called supply and service contractors. They have to prepare what's called affirmative action programs, which are compliance documents, again, set forth in the regs on how they have to be done. But it involves talking about your affirmative action efforts. It involves analyzing data from a certain time frame and also looking at applicants and compensation and all the things that you would think of under Title VII that would fall under that. Because what this is about is making sure that federal contractors and subcontractors do not discriminate. And the OSCCP group that we've been talking about is the group that's going to come in and try to enforce that and monitor compliance. So it's a pretty, and these AAPs have to be done every year. They don't have to be sent in to the OSCCP right now unless there is an audit. There's some change in the wind that the contractors may have to submit them later. But right now, if there's an audit, those AAPs are looked at. It works kind of like the EEOC. They'll do some off-site analysis. They might come on-site. And eventually, they're going to tell you, do they think that you've been discriminating or not complying with your obligations, or do you get a free pass for the next 5 years?
So, Lee, let's talk a little bit about the OFCCP. What exactly does that stand for? Tell us a little bit about what the OFCCP is.
It's a real sexy name, right? It's the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs. The acronym is OFCCP. It's a division of the United States Department of Labor, just like Wage and Hour folks are and other labor agencies. The Secretary Acosta is in charge of the Department of Labor, and the acting director of OFCCP is a guy called Craig Lean. He's a lawyer, very smart, and he is in charge of six regional OFCCP offices throughout the country, and each one of them has area and district offices within them. So it's a nationwide agency charged with enforcing the affirmative action obligations for federal contractors on a nationwide basis. They've got a really good website, too. It's dol.gov/OFCCP has lots of information.
And how does the OFCCP go about enforcing the federal contractors' obligations?
So the main way that they enforce is to conduct what's called a compliance evaluation or audit. And the way they figure out who to audit right now is off EEO1 reports in part. So that, again, there's a section on the EEO1's report that says, are you a federal contractor or a subcontractor? And if you check yes, you go into a database. And of course, you're going to check yes if you're covered, right? But that's one aspect, along with some others such as industry information and other information pulled from the EEO1 and the enforcement databases. But they select you. They select about 2,000 to 3,000 employers a year for audits. Historically, they give you a heads up that it's coming, and so they expect you to be ready. When that audit hits, you've got 30 days to submit the information they want to them, and so you need to make sure, number one, it's complete when you submit it, but number two, that it's not getting you in legal jeopardy because it looks bad.
Got it. And so what are some of the hot topics for the OFCCP currently?
So the bread and butter of OFCCP has been hiring discrimination. Again, it's an enforcement agency. They're looking to ferret out discrimination. And they're one of the ways that they've been very successful is attacking what they call systemic hiring discrimination. It looks at statistically how many applicants come in the door, how many are hired, and whether there's an adverse effect on a protected group. That protected group could be African-Americans, it could be Caucasians, it could be men or women. And those types of allegations lead either to a resolution with a monetary settlement, if they can't be rebutted, or to even litigation in front of an administrative law judge. Recently, and I'd say in the last 5 years or so, OFCCP has also gotten into the pay discrimination game. They're very much interested in pay discrimination, as are many agencies and regulators. So that's a huge deal there. The biggest thing these days is the claim that contractors are not paying attention to their affirmative action obligations, and OFCCP is actually suing contractors who do not have their affirmative action programs prepared, who do not submit them on time, and who don't comply. I don't see that trend changing. I see the agency trying to figure out who's not complying and going after them.
Lee, what are the best tips that you have, just basic tips for federal contractors to make sure that they are in basic compliance with these requirements? And I know it gets a lot more complicated, and we're going to talk about some of those issues in future podcasts. But what are sort of some of your basic tips on what they need to be aware of?
Sure. Number one, you need to know what your obligations are. Ogletree has a robust compliance checklist. If you're interested, we're happy to send it to you. Gives you the obligations and templates and best practices and all those fun things that you need to make this a little bit easier. But bottom line, you need to do your AAPs every year, assuming you know that you're a federal contractor. You need to know what that data shows. It's like in any potential litigation, where are my risks? Where are my hotspots? So analyzing that information every year as you're supposed to can help you with that, and it actually can be a little proactive. You need to make sure that if an audit comes in, you understand what's being asked of you, and you present the data in the form that is most advantageous to you. So there's some ways to do that. And bottom line, just understand that this agency can be a devil to deal with or an angel to deal with. And a lot of that is on contractors. You know, how well do they comply? How fully do they understand their obligations? And how much can they persuade OFCCP that they know what they are?
So, Lee, we've talked a lot about federal contractors here, but I think we ought to just mention subcontractors. What is the issue with subcontractors, and when are subcontractors impacted by these laws and obligations?
There's some misinformation out there that, you know, if my company does business with a federal contractor, let's just say, you know, pick a large defense contractor and I'm just doing business there. That's not enough to make you covered under these laws. You've got to be either necessary to a federal contract, or you've got to assume a federal contract. So let me give you an example on that. If I'm working for a large defense, let's just say a defense plane manufacturer making jets, and I am responsible for providing the motor that or the engine that runs that jet, I'm pretty necessary to that contract, right? Now, on the other hand, if I'm just the cleaning service that's cleaning up the hangar where the plane is being built, I'm not so necessary. So it's not just that you do business with someone who's a federal contractor, but that you're necessary or that somehow you assume part of their obligations. It's a really big distinction. It sounds very lawyer-like. It is a lawyerly distinction, but it is a very important distinction to understand what you have to do and when you don't have to do it.
Great. Well, thank you, Lee. And listen, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with us today about what's the deal with federal contractors with the OFCCP, the basics. We appreciate
it. Absolutely. My pleasure.
Okay. And I want to thank all of our listeners for joining us today on this topic. And I hope you'll join us next time. We're going to have an additional discussion with Lee about OFCCP obligations. And our next topic will be about best practices for defending your hiring processes. So until next time, this is Jim McGrew wishing you much success in your workplace. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.